Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from thousands of successful individuals from around the world. I'm your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm privileged to welcome a very, very senior and accomplished professional from the world of financial services from Las Vegas, USA, Mr. Mark Lieberman. Mark, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ashutosh. Thank you for having me here.
Thank you. Mark is the former chief executive officer of Transamerica Life Bermuda. He is a senior financial services executive. He's also a partner at Huntington Partners, and he's earlier been CEO of several insurance companies around the world. He is a results-oriented C-suite executive with a history of building high-performance teams and inclusive, empowered cultures. So, Mark, before we talk about work, tell me about your own journey. And what drives your leadership philosophy?
Well, thank you, Ashutosh. It's a great question. If I look back at the time from when I graduated from university to where I am today, I have to say that it's not a path I would have expected. Mm-hmm. Coming out of university, I was relatively unsure of what I wanted to do. Being the first generation of my family to go to university, neither my parents nor grandparents ever had the opportunity, which put me in a unique position, but it also put me in a position of really having no experience to draw on or guidance to draw on of what does that mean.
Right.
I just knew that it was a ticket. Hmm. Going to university was a ticket to then find myself, find my career.
Yeah.
So I got out of university and I graduated with a degree in business studies, finance. And I was always fascinated by the markets and numbers and math. So I became an investment professional, became a financial planner to start out. And what I found throughout my career, which now spans 37 years, a few years there, is that you have to recognize opportunities when they present themselves. Mm-hmm. And that's the philosophy I took, is to look for new challenges, to look for new opportunities. And I did it within the field of financial services.
Mm.
And I think starting the way I did, being face-to-face with a customer at 22 years old and having to convince people of my trustworthiness to manage their investments for them gave me a great appreciation of the customer. Mm. And that's something that I reflect on and hold on to throughout my career,
right,
up into the most recent roles over the last 20 years as a chief executive officer of a number of very large companies.
Amazing. Amazing. Thank you for sharing this. So now let's talk a little bit about building high performance teams and empowering these teams. My first question is, what does a high performance team look like to you? And what are some of its core attributes?
Yeah. Given the fact that I've had the privilege of leading a number of different teams around the world, New Zealand, Australia, Hong Kong, Dublin, I've dealt with many different cultures, many different backgrounds of the individuals on my team. Hmm. And one of the common elements that I always look for, and quite frankly, I always demand in building the teams and motivating the teams, is commitment and an ethical mindset.
Hmm.
I think it's important that people are committed to the job. They're committed to doing the right thing for the customer and want to be part of the team. Again, diversity is incredibly important. And again, I've been privileged to have incredibly diverse teams any way you want to draw them. But the common thread is, commitment and an ethical mindset.
Well said. And how do you balance, Mark, the need for immediate results? And, we're reaching a culture of quarter by quarter performance now all over the world. How do you balance the need for immediate results with fostering a culture of innovation and a long-term vision?
Again, you're asking great questions. That is one of the biggest challenges in business today. And particularly when you're involved with a multinational. So you're one subsidiary, one segment of a larger organization. And what I found is having clear communication and understanding both up the chain and down the chain.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone's aligned for what's important today, but also is important for the long term.
Mm.
And making sure you have that commitment that, yes, we need results today, but we also need to make investments that will pay off in the future and make us a stronger organization. Not always easy to do. But again, you have to be clear, you have to be consistent, and you have to communicate well to make sure everyone's on board.
Well said. And when you look back at your own career, what are some of the challenges you have encountered while building inclusive cultures? And more so because you seem to have worked in so many different countries with so many different cultures.
Yeah. So one of the challenges I've found in my career, especially as I've gone into more senior roles, is often I'm coming in from the outside. And when you're coming in from the outside, you have an established team there of many layers, you know, sometimes hundreds of people, you know, in the organization. And you're the outsider coming in, but you're also the leader coming in.
Right.
And it's really important to understand what the business has been doing, what's it intending to do, who the people are, what their strengths are, but also what their weaknesses are, and then build that level of rapport so you can determine, you know, do people want to be part of what this new organization is and what the new goals and objectives are? And if they're not, you have to find ways to make changes.
Great response. Thank you. And how do you ensure that the voice of every team member is heard and valued?
Again, great question. You've got a bunch of winners here. One of the ways I've done it in every role I've had is I would hold monthly lunches. We call them lunches with the CEO. And I would have a lunch with anywhere from 10 to 15 people, you know, in our boardroom or conference room. And it would not include my direct reports. So it would include everyone two, three, four steps down. Anyone could sign up. And I would do it every month. And it was a completely safe and open forum for people to talk to me and give me their ideas, their challenges, and what's working and what's not working. You know, sometimes you have to prod people because there's a fear there. Should they speak up? You know, will their boss get mad if they say something? And I was always very clear to ensure to them that this was a safe environment and I'm there to learn. And I'm there to help them build a better company. And what I found is those that volunteered, because this was not something that I selected people, they had to sign up for. Those that volunteer truly wanted to make the company a better place, wanted to express their ideas, felt that maybe they weren't getting the audience, and this was a great way. So it's gone over very well. I've done it in many, many companies, and it's something that I would recommend and continue.
Interesting. My next question is that what role does emotional intelligence play and what role has it played in your leadership style, especially when you're leading diverse teams?
Emotional intelligence, I think, is something that is probably not focused on enough. I think a lot of leaders, maybe I don't want to draw generalizations, a lot of leaders lack in it. They come in and they say, this is what you have to do and you got to figure it out and do it. And they don't take the time to realize that everyone's an individual. Everyone has their own issues outside of work. And you've got to be sensitive to that. That doesn't mean, you know, that work is a, you know, one big therapy session. But what it does mean is you have to be sensitive to the fact that you're dealing with individuals who have lives. And you've got to be willing to listen and to do everything you can to create an environment that they want to be a part of and that they can be productive.
Wonderful. My next question is that how do you, or in what ways do you believe an empowered and inclusive culture contributes to the company's bottom line?
Well, I can speak from experience there. The cultures I have been able to build that are inclusive and are motivating are successful. It's interesting when I look at some of the roles I've taken on in the different companies, it's almost like I've got a reputation as Mr. Fix-It, you know, underperforming cultures, underperforming businesses, and somehow they get my name, I come in, and I've been, you know, very fortunate and successful in being able to turn that around. And I don't see it as any magic. I see it as, you know, by doing the things we're talking about, you know, building that culture of, you know, emotional intelligence, of valuing your team members, of being a clear communicator, but also holding people accountable, making sure they want to be part of the team. They want to contribute to the success And quite frankly, they're not just showing up to collect a paycheck.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to want to succeed in order to be successful.
Yeah, well said. And what strategies have you employed to keep your teams motivated, especially during challenging times?
Yeah. Well, clearly, if you look at 2020 mm-hmm. and 2019, even, those were some challenging times. The markets, mm-hmm. were difficult. In fact, go back further, 2008, 2009, very challenging times in the world of global finance. Mm-hmm. And again, it comes back to the basics. I think the most important thing in challenging times is be honest, be open. Don't try to sugarcoat things mm-hmm. to your team. If things are going in a difficult manner, tell them why. If there are things that we can do to correct that, let them know what that is so they can help contribute to the solution to it. Sometimes it's just tough, and yeah. you've got to say, hey, this is going to be a tough year.
Yeah.
We're doing everything we can, but it's going to be a tough year. A lot of it's outside of our control. So let's focus on what's within our control and deliver that as well as possible.
Well said. Tighten your belts, I would imagine. Mark, can you share an instance where empowering your team led directly to a significant breakthrough or a success for the company?
Sure. I was CEO of MetLife Australia.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the early 2010s.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a very excellent chief operational officer.
Mm-hmm.
And he came to me and said, listen, we need to innovate. We need to build a paperless system for life insurance applications. It needs to be paperless, all online from application to claim.
Mm-hmm.
No one touches anything. And we need to make it fast. We need to make it efficient.
Right.
And it's something that the parent company, my parent company, had been working on and spending tens of millions of dollars for quite some time. And I had the option of saying, well, let's talk to New York and see what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And, maybe we can borrow what they did. But this individual came to me and he said, I can build this. We've got the team. We know our market. We know our customers. We know our processes.
Hmm.
We're in Australia. We're not in America. If you give me the funding, which was not a lot, it was $2 or $3 million, I can do this here.
Hmm.
And I said, fine, I trust you, keep me informed, show me the plan, let's have regular updates, and tell me how you're going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And he did it.
Wow.
And he delivered a system that was absolutely fantastic. It was state of the art, cost a mere fraction of what the parent company had been spending on it.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, when we launched it and they saw it, they stopped doing what they were doing and they copied it and took ours.
Oh, wonderful. And what a great motivator it must have been for your COO. But moving on. Go ahead. You're saying
something? No, it was great. It was great for everyone involved.
Absolutely, absolutely. But moving on, Mark, can you share a pivotal moment in your career where a lesson learned dramatically shifted your leadership approach?
Sure. I was with ING and in the U.S.,
mm-hmm.
and I was in charge of what we called career distribution for life insurance in the U.S. Mm-hmm. Basically, this was closely aligned agents throughout the U.S. that sold primarily ING product.
Mm-hmm.
And there was about 4,500 agents in the U.S., and we were growing, we were doing well. But I was a piece of a bigger business. I wasn't, the CEO of the life company. I wasn't, I was running my pieces, but it was still very much embedded within the broader U.S.
Right.
Context. And I had a boss come to me and he said, Mark, he goes, when you joined the company a number of years ago and you had to fill out all the papers, one of the things you checked was a box that said, you're open to international travel.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, okay. Mm-hmm. Didn't remember it. I checked it, a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, we have a role and, you've been doing a great job and we'd like to consider you for it. I said, okay.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, but I can't tell you where it is or what it is.
Amazing.
And I said, okay.
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, I can tell you I'm interested, but I'm not signing on until I know where it is and what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And, push came to shove and I found out more information. It turned out to be CEO of ING New Zealand. And that was in the end of 2005. And that was my truly first independent CEO role, where, you know, it was an independent country. It was soup to nuts, everything, every responsibility for the business. And I'll never forget, the head of international came to me, and before I left for New Zealand, he said, "Mark," he goes, "I'm going to toss you the keys to New Zealand. Don't screw it up."
Okay. Wonderful.
And so it was a pivotal moment for me, because what it did is it really impressed upon me. I had to earn that job every day. I had my value every day, and I didn't have a boss, you know, two offices down in the same building that I could go to and say, "Hey, you know, can you help me out here?"
Amazing. Amazing. Thank you. What a great story. My next question is, how do you handle the balance between giving your team's autonomy? And from the examples you've shared, you do give, or you have been giving your teams a lot of autonomy, and ensuring alignment with the company's goals.
Yeah. So the key to that is really simple. It's organization, in my opinion, and quality project management. So you empower people, but they also understand what it is they have to accomplish. And you make sure the communication is ongoing. I have regular updates with all of my direct reports and their teams on key projects. That's not so I can tell them anything. It's so they can tell me what's going on, and not so I can check on them, but more where they can say, "Hey, you know, we're struggling maybe in a little area. Can you give us some help? Or we're not getting the cooperation with XYZ, you know, partner. Can you help figure it out?" So it's really clear communication, empowering people with clear cut goals of what they need to do, but then making sure that communication is ongoing so you can continue to support. One of the things that I found as a CEO, and I think this is a mistake a lot of CEOs make, is I believe a CEO works for the organization. The higher you go in an organization, the less you do hands-on from a day-to-day basis in terms of, you know, processing paperwork, dealing with customers, making things work. You're there to make sure everyone else is successful. And if you're not communicating, if you're not providing that assistance, you're not doing your job.
Very interesting. So time for a few more questions. My next question is, in a world of rapid technological change, how do you ensure teams stay agile and ahead of the curve?
Yeah, so it's constant learning. You've got to make sure you give your especially your senior team members, you know, the ability to interact with peers within the industry. So whether that's going to conferences, participating in panels, you know, making sure you're getting the intel that's out there so they can constantly continue to educate themselves. You as a leader need to do the same thing so that you know what's going on. Because you're right, it's the information boom is just incredible. One of the toughest jobs I've had as a CEO is keeping up with what's going on, keeping up with the reading. It's funny, I often talk to my wife, I used to be a voracious reader of books for pleasure. And I love nothing more than sitting down with a book, you know, and reading it. And I found, you know, I'm getting back into that now. But as a CEO, you're so consumed with reading and making sure you're on top of things, it sometimes doesn't provide any time to read for pleasure.
Very well said. Absolutely right. So two more questions, Mark. My next question is, how do you handle the inevitable failures or missteps?
Failures happen. You can't avoid them. You can try to do your best to be successful with whatever you do, but no one can foresee every hurdle that you go through. And so when you have a failure, you have to sit down and not point a finger, but you have to sit down and analyze it and deconstruct it. Why did it go wrong? Did we not do enough research? Did we not know the market we were going into? Did the market change and we didn't recognize the change as we were going forward? So it's really, it's a cooperative communication where you're almost like a forensic scientist figuring out what did happen.
Right.
And it's really important, again, if you've got a good team, that means everyone's working hard trying to be successful. So chances are it's not because, you know, someone didn't do their job or someone, you know, was lazy and cut corners. That happens, but it should be very rare. It's going to be more of things shifted. And maybe, you know, you didn't see the shift. So to me, it's not about blame. It's about understanding what went on and then how do we pivot to go to where we can be successful in that. Mm-hmm.
Great response. Thank you. And my last question, and this is for the many, many people who will listen to our conversation. A lot of them will be professionals aspiring to reach the top like you. What advice would you give to someone aspiring to reach the C-suite, especially in, you know, when you're part of a high-performing team?
So this is a good one. So I have two sons, 30 and 31 years old. I know I don't look old enough to have sons that age, but I do. And I'm fortunate and they're both very successful. And one of the things I've talked to them throughout their lives and now in their professional careers is always do the right thing. Mm-hmm. When you come to a road mm-hmm. and there's a why mm-hmm. and you're not sure which way to go, mm-hmm. picture me standing next to you. Mm-hmm. What would my advice be mm-hmm. to help you make that decision? Doesn't mean I'm always right, yeah. but it helps with that moral compass. And the other thing is earn your job every day. Mm-hmm. Don't just show up. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not difficult to motivate yourself and to do a little bit more mm-hmm. than the other guy. You know, a lot of people just show up and just showing up is not enough. It's never been enough, but more and more today, it will never get you to where you need to go. So be committed, do the right thing and do more than the person next to you.
Wonderful. And on that note, Mark, and your amazing lessons, do the right thing, earn your job every day and do more than the person next to you. Thank you so much for speaking to me about your own amazing journey. Thank you for speaking to me about so many different aspects of leadership, of empowering of cultures, and of managing high-performance teams. Thank you again for speaking to me, and good luck.
Oh, well, thank you very much. It's been my absolute pleasure, and best of luck to you.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.